The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, friends, neighbors, and people. Welcome to We the People Radio. You are joining Elizabeth and our special guest this morning, Ruth Angel. My great friend and comrade, Erin Ryan, is a little under the weather today, had a little bit of surgery about a week ago, and she's recuperating, but I have no doubt that she's sitting in bed with her laptop chatting away. I expect to see her pop on to the chat room momentarily. So join us. Give us a call at 530-605-4567. We're chatting in the stream and live at wethepeopleradio.us. And I really encourage you to jump onto the webpage, because in addition to everything about today's guest, which really helps you follow along with a conversation, we put up links to everything that our guests have to offer, including, their websites, their books, whatnot. But also, we have a complete archive of all of the shows that we've done over the last year and a half. And, social media and email and texting, and there's just a million ways to get the word out today, and we have all of those files from our archived shows ready for you to just click on and email out to anybody, anywhere. So I really encourage you to check out that webpage. Our great friend Robert does a fabulous job, and it's just a wealth of information. And good morning to Bob Martin, our engineer, and he pulls incredible music out of his hat every Sunday morning. Hi, Bob.
Well, thank you, Elizabeth. Good morning to you. And
Ruth. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here. Just a different venue for me, not talking about real estate, but I talk about a lot of things, very rarely ever real estate when we're on our show.
And I've listened to your show, and it's more political than it is
anything else. Try to cover all of our bases. We try to cover those things that affect real estate in this neighborhood, and it'll be interesting to talk with a guest, because I'm actually from the Bay Area, where I think the cultures clash.
Sure,
so
sure they do.
And
Erin is listening this morning, right?
Good. I have no doubt. I have
no
doubt.
We're all pulling for you, Erin.
Yeah, she's recuperating. I don't think it's been a fun week, but she's a tough cookie, so I expect to see her back soon.
Has not been a fun week for me either, but I'm not trying to compare my situation with hers, but I have been fighting this darn flu bug all week,
yeah.
And it finally beat me up to the point I had to stay in bed all day yesterday.
Oh, we're sorry to hear that.
Yeah. Hopefully we're going to be here next week. And you don't give us cooties.
as long as you keep a little distance there, Bob.
Oh, the
nothing personal.
Yeah, Carl and Linda don't care if I expose the weekend host.
But they kept real problems.
As long as I don't give it to them.
So let me guess, they kept you out of the studio during the week?
Oh no! But I've got the Lysol wipes handy here.
Oh, and that's what that little face mask is all about down there on the floor, right?
Yeah, someone in here is wearing a face mask, not me.
maybe it was Kurtz.
Hey, it might have been.
Yeah.
Hey, so today we're gonna be talking with a very special guest. Yeah, Neil Mammon, and he's on the phone now, I believe, but I wanted to give a little bio about him. And as you know, the tenets of this show are limited government, fiscal responsibility, and adherence to the Constitution, and that applies no matter where you're at. So we're fortunate enough to bring in guests from all over the place to share their perspectives, and they're all fighting the good fight. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of a history on Neil, and then we're going to jump on the phone with them and let him tell us which direction he wants to take the show today. But Neil Mammon is, this is straight off of his website, so it's kind of a fun bio, is a non-hyphenated first-generation American immigrant, and he's an engineer during the day and an apologist at night. As an engineer, he spends his time architecting and designing networking and video delivery systems, computer chips, boards, and FPGAs with TentMakerSystems.com. I have no idea what an FPGA is, but I'm sure we'll find out. And he works in the United States and other international engineering companies. Neil was born in Ghana and grew up in Sudan and Yemen. He came to the U.S. at the age of 18 and earned his BSEE in computer and electrical engineering at the age of 20. Holy cow. And his MSEE in solid-state physics and computer engineering at 22. Neil has co-founded 4 startup companies in Silicon Valley. He has about 20 issued and pending patents in areas varying from networking, traffic shaping, and packet processing to LED local dimming TV methodologies. Okay, so here's the good stuff. He's the founder of NoBlindFaith.com, which will be up on the website. I know Robert will, he'll throw that link up there for you. An apologetics and evangelization ministry focused on training everyday people to use apologetics in evangelization without awkwardness. Apologetics is the investigation and the defense of the truth of Christianity using facts, reason, science, history, archaeology, and philosophy. So, how's that?
So, with that said, Neil, are you there?
I am indeed.
Good morning, Neil. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to have you today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Neil, talk a little bit about apologetics.
Well, apologetics, it's a biblical reference. It comes from the word apologia, which means to defend or explain. And in the New Testament, St. Peter the Apostle, says that we should always be willing to give an apologia or defense of our faith using, but doing so with kindness and respect. And so that's what apologetics is. It's the basis. And most people, you know, believe in one religion or the other. And, you know, my ministry is called No Blind Faith. Sadly, most of us are blindly following our religion. And the problem is anytime you blindly follow anything, even if it's the right thing, people who can mislead you, because they can say, well, God told me to tell you to do this. And if you know no better, you will do it. Right? And so the importance of apologetics is to find out, A, what religion is true, and if Christianity is true, which is my claim, why is it true, and what does it teach in such a way that we don't end up being fanatical, you know, crusade types that go out and think that our job is to kill people for Christ or something, you know. Very ridiculous like that.
But, well, and when you think about it, if I look back on my own personal history and in my experience in Christianity, there's this mindset that you just have faith. If you question anything about God or question anything about spirituality or Christianity or how it impacts your life or where it came from, the idea behind it is you just have faith. So that kind of flies in the face of apologetics, if I'm not...
It does. And so my question to anyone who says, well, you just have faith, I say, well, the 9/11 hijackers just had faith, too. Why is your faith any better than their faith? In fact, their faith was stronger than your faith. They're willing to go out of their comfort zone to kill people for their religion. You're not even willing to go out of your comfort zone to save people. You know, so why their religion is obviously much stronger. Their faith, rather, is much stronger than yours. Is the strength of somebody's faith justified? And then if you say that, people go, no, the 9/11 hijackers were wrong. Well, okay, well, why were they wrong? If they have a stronger feeling, if they have more conviction, but they still have no evidence for what they did was right, then why are they any different from you? Why are you just lucky you were born a Christian or lucky you were born or whatever, you know? And so then when you start asking those questions, people say, I guess blind faith can lead to really, really dangerous things. I say, yeah, it can. And what's worse is that, and the way I look at this is, let's say I go to a doctor, and a doctor, and I have blind faith in the doctor, and the doctor gets it wrong, right? And, you know, he says, you have diabetes, but really he's not even a doctor. He's a witch doctor. And he says, the way to cure your diabetes is to sacrifice a dead chicken at midnight. And I do it, and I die from diabetes, if you can.
Yeah.
You can, if you don't treat it.
Sure you can.
Well, at the worst, the doctors, let's say I was 20 when I went in, and the doctor killed me, or I died as a result, and I was going to live till 80, well, I've lost 60 years of my life. But I turn to people and I say, now, if you go to your priest or your pastor or your evangelical pastor or your Muslim mullah or your Buddhist monk or whoever, you know, your Hindu priest, and he's wrong, now what happens? What do you lose? And when you think about it, well, I could lose all eternity. So if I shouldn't have blind faith in my doctor, how much, for measly 60 years, why, how much less blind faith do I have in my pastor, for all eternity. And so we ask people that question. We say, now you better think deeply about the decisions you make about spiritual things.
Well, my question, but, to you, Neil, is that when you talk about the two cultures, 9/11, blind faith, you can't question religious or any religious values. You grew up in Yemen and the Sudan. You can't question religion in those countries. Where here we have a mixture, a diverse culture, where we have a mixing of all different types of religions, and is that going to be the downfall here?
Well, actually, no. I think because you see the beauty about Christianity, I believe, is that it can prove itself. So the more people look deeper into Christianity, so when you have a merging of cultures, when I talk to people, I say, I can pretty much, in fact, today at 8 p.m., I'm speaking at Menlo College up in here in Menlo Park in the Bay Area. I'm speaking to a group of students, and everybody's welcome, by the way, if you come on campus. It's menlocollege.edu, I believe, or menlo.edu. And if you come on campus, the topic I'm speaking is proving that it's more reasonable to think that God exists using science and logic. In other words, I think I can prove to you it's most rational to think that God exists using the Big Bang Theory. And we're going to go into the Big Bang Theory. We're going to go into multidimensionality, talk about quantum physics. We'll talk all about that and show that it actually makes more sense to believe that God exists. So that's the first item I teach people. The second item I teach people is that the Bible that we have today, the New Testament Bible today, is 99.8% accurate as to what they actually wrote. And we can prove that. That is exactly what we have today is what they wrote 2,000 years ago. What we have is accurate. And the point, if you go, well, what about that 0.2%? Well, that 0.2% ends up being 400 words. And the only thing that we're confused about is that we have two variations of it. You know, in some places we have the word and mother. In other words, parts we have and wife. So we're confused whether it says and wife or and mother. But the passage is not relevant to salvation. It's more relevant to general idea.
We need to take a break, and I'll get back to that in just a few minutes. But I do want to ask you a question since you're going to the university today about the millennial generation, which you might be contributing to as an engineer, by the way.
So Neil, when we return, do you want to segue into what Ruth just brought up about the youth? Because that is probably the biggest concern that most people have, and I think they're more open-minded, and I believe that they are searching for facts, myself.
Yeah, but they don't know that it's out there.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break to thank our advertisers. You're listening to We the People Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Day by day. Day by day. Oh, dear Lord, three things I pray. To see thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, follow thee more nearly, day by day.
Jones is Fort. Redding's Full Line Gun Shop offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's Full Line Gun Shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find the gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have 4 full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
Missing in America Veterans Recovery Program, MIAP, conducts funeral escort services in the western states for veterans and their dependents free of charge. When requested by the family, MIAP will take them and their loved one on the final journey to rest in peace. Our thoughts and prayers go with the family and their grief, and we can help make this a safe and legal transport at no cost. Contact MIAP at 530-226-9900. That's 530-226-9900.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
To We the People. We are talking with Neil Mammen, author of Jesus is Involved in Politics. And, you know, off air, Ruth and I were having a pretty animated discussion about the millennium generation. And Ruth was talking about a survey that was taken, a study that was done earlier this month, and how it impacts not only the workforce, but I think pure economics of the next generation.
Well, I think it just flies, it deals directly with what you're talking about, Neil. The study was done, and just the results of that study came out a few weeks ago in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. But the PBS NewsHour did a show on it, and I was really struck by some of the things that were very profound coming out of that. There are 50 million generation millennial, and they describe this generation as money-obsessed, less concerned with politics, community, environment. And so having you as a guest on the show was almost great timing for me, because I want to know, one, how you're going to bridge and bring that culture into, you know, your way of thinking, and do it because of the you talk about 40 million Christians not voting, and yet you have 50 million generation millennial who half of them, two out of one of them, voted for Obama. And that just blows me away, and I feel like we're going to lose this election. Conservatives and Christians are going to lose this election because of this generation that are actually at home living with their parents, who are probably voting for Republicans.
Which is really interesting, because they love money, they're smart, they don't care about community or an environment. And I'll be the first one to tell you that I see very few of them volunteering. The volunteer workforce has just disappeared in that generation. So they're capitalists at heart, but it's on someone else's dime.
As long as they've got their social network. Neil, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, one thing that I am encouraged is that many of them are asking questions and they're looking for answers. And you can see that actually in how infectious the Ron Paul campaign has been with young kids.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's a huge movement among young kids. I talk to kids all the time, and they're like Ron Paul diehards. And that's because he's got ideas, he's got concepts that actually come across. This is not an endorsement for any candidate, by the way.
But make note of that, everybody.
And I think it's because if you listen to Ron Paul, he actually has reasons behind what he says, and he's willing to explain things, and he's not pushing just the emotional aspect. So the kids that are attracted to facts and logic and the scientifically minded, the engineering minded, the kids who, the business minded kids are going to say, hey, you know, I want to understand how the world works, and this makes sense. So this logically falls together. So in the same way, when we go on campuses and stuff and talk to kids, a lot of them say, well, I want to understand how things work. Now, many of them are predisposed to say, well, all religions are equally true. And I'm fine with that. I'd rather talk to somebody who says it's possible that all religions are equally true than someone who says, well, you know what, it's only Islam is true, or only Hinduism is true, only Buddhism is true. You know, because then I at least have an opening to actually discuss that with them. So I think that, you know, even though, yes, it does look like, you know, it's kind of sort of a horrible trend in one direction, I think that we can turn it around. But I think it's going to be up to us, the older generation, the kids on campuses. There are lots of good organizations on campus that actually are moving into the venue of apologetics. I mean, I've been teaching apologetics since about 1984 or 5 when I discovered it. And I was like, wow, didn't know this has been around. Where has this been all my life? even though I grew up in a home where I tied science with faith, my dad's a professor in physics. But once I came to the States, most Americans had actually run away from science, and so it was really encouraging for me to see it. But now we see apologetics, just huge resurgence of it. We see, and especially amongst the young. So I would say, while it doesn't mean that we'll see a turnaround soon, I think we'll see a gradual growth, and I think that we'll, the kids will understand that as we explain things. And then I think that's really important, is that when somebody asks me, you know, why should I believe in a God, I don't want to say just have faith, I want to say here's why you should. And it's the same thing that we do as Tea Partiers, right? If somebody says, well, why should I vote for fiscal government, you know, why should I vote for limited government? Well, let me explain why, let me give you the reasons why. And I always precede that by saying, I'm going to present you with an argument. And to refute my argument, you have to show either my facts are wrong or my logic is wrong. There is no other way to refute my argument. Anything else would be an ad hominem or a fallacy. So, you know, some people say, well, you're mean-spirited. I said, okay, I may be mean-spirited. It's possible that I'm mean-spirited. You know, in fact, I know that I am mean-spirited on occasion because I'm a human being. But that does not mean my argument is wrong. Because even if a Nazi says 1 plus 1 is equal to 2, it's still 2, right?
So sure. Let's focus. And we know they're mean-spirited.
And we know they're mean-spirited, you know. So at least that means let's take at least this part. You don't need to look at the whole life of the Nazi, but if you say 1 plus 1 is equal to 2, then let's look at that part and see if that makes sense, yeah. And then we can discuss if any other part of his philosophy which doesn't make sense, and we can use his whole logic against him. So that's what I say to people. I want to present you an argument, and if my argument is wrong, show me where my argument is wrong, but don't call me names.
Sure.
And a lot of kids respect that. They say, you know what, that makes sense. I'll let me understand your argument and let me look through it. But, you know, it's always an uphill battle. But when I'm happy to do it, you know,
so
it's a lot of fun.
When you're giving a lecture on apologetics, what does your audience look like?
Well, it depends. I try to get as many non-believers to come in, right? But I can't always do that. Usually we'll only have, like, maybe 5% of non-believers, because really my focus is on both. I want to talk about people who don't believe and talk about people who do believe that don't know how to communicate their faith. So, for instance, when I go today, I will at Menlo College, my guess is, since it's a college campus, my guess will actually have a higher number, probably 20% who don't believe. The rest will probably be Christians who are, you know, trying to get their friends to come to the event. And it's advertised on campus, so it's prove God exists without using the Bible.
That's great.
You know,
that's great.
God exists, right?
Well, and that's why kids are in school too. Is the whole point of being there is to figure out why things work the way they work and what you're supposed to do with it.
Well, I think too, there are a lot of schools, high schools especially, that are trying to get kids involved, and actually some of them that require them to go out into the community and give them credits at so that they can graduate. And yet, I find that the kids of today, they go to church with their parents on the weekends, but that doesn't translate, and it's obviously not translating with this generation because they are saying that they are not interested. They're not interested in the politics, they're not interested in their environment, and they're not as interested in their community, which, well, what you say is that they should be, because it's going to be the churches that will save America.
Well, I totally believe that. But I think part of the problem there is because their parents' generation has never told them that Christianity should be intellectually valid.
Mm.
So what happened to them is they've gone to church for years, and their pastors, the youth pastors, whatever, have said, we're going to give you an emotional faith with Christ.
Right.
We're going to make
right.
you love Christ. But Christ was the greatest philosopher in the world. He was the greatest arguer in the world. I mean, he was the greatest debater. Look at all his debates. So people come against him, and he kind of shuts them down with a few words, and they're like, oh, how do I answer that, right, that kind of thing. And if you look at all the sciences came about because monks and priests said, you know what, we want to understand the mind of God. Because until Christianity came around, God was this capricious, or God, or gods, were these capricious beings that would do anything randomly, didn't care. But until Christianity came around, or Judeo-Christianity, rather, came around, now suddenly God was stable, transcendent, eternal. And when he created the world, he created it with a special design. So all the monks went down and said, let us understand how God created the world. And that's where the sciences came from. So most of these sciences that we see are come from the roots of Christian beliefs. I mean, there's definitely some Socrates and Plato and all that in the background too. But all the modern sciences that we think of, like biology, chemistry, all these were started by monks for that specific reason, to understand God's mind.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I think, I think that as we focus kids towards that, so what's happened is kids go to church and they get this emotional faith, and then when they go to college, the professors say, no, 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 that's all a myth. That's all a nice myth. You can just believe that if you want. But the reality, here's the truth. Here's science. I'm going to show you an experiment. Well, you know what? I can show you an experiment to do with the Bible to prove that the Bible is accurate. Well, you know what? I can prove, I believe, you know, one of the other things that we talk about on campus is how we can prove using the minimal facts. There are only 7 facts that we need. It's called a minimal fact. 7 facts are accepted by all historians about Christ. One, you know, things like he was crucified. He did claim to be God. He had a brother named James. He, you know, and things like that. There are 7 facts that already exist. We can use to prove that actually the only valid conclusion to what happened 2,000 years ago was that he rose from the dead. And it goes around, it's a very simple proof, and it just goes through every single possible explanation for the events that happened 2,000 years ago, which we prove, first of all, not using the Bible. In other words, I can prove a number of things about Christ without ever touching the Bible. I can prove that there was a man named Jesus. Josephus talks about him, Tacitus talks about him, Pliny talks about him, all these non-Christian people who hated the Christians talk about him as a historical figure.
Well, I can tell you, emotionally, I was whacked. It was whacked into my being by the nuns. We got it, and it was an emotional it was an emotional thing because we either got it or we got the ruler. But we need to take a break, so we'll get back to you in just a few minutes, and we'll
when we come back, let's talk science.
Yeah, science.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Why me, Lord? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the pleasures I've known?
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
She didn't even have time to cry. She was so scared. She threw her hands up in the air. Jesus, take the wheel. Take it from my hands. Cause I can't do this on my own. I'm letting go. So give me one more chance. Save me from this road I'm on. Jesus, take the wheel.
We are back. We the people. Bob, who was that?
That's Carrie Underwood.
I like that. I've heard it before.
American Idol winner. That was her first hit after she won American Idol. Jesus, take the wheel.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Great song. So, Neil, let's talk science. Yeah. If we were your audience tonight, how are you going to prove to us
That there's more reasonable to think God exists? Well, okay, in a short, I go into a lot more detail here. But in a short way, first of all, we talk about the Big Bang. The Big Bang, actually, which I think is pretty conclusive evidence of accepted by science, says a couple of things. One, it says that the universe started with a Big Bang. And there are a couple of things that we can notice about this Big Bang. And you know, a lot of Christians are like, oh, the Big Bang, oh, no, that's trouble for us. No, no, no. The Big Bang, actually, for years before this discovery of the Big Bang, scientists said the universe existed forever. And so they would say, you know, the universe existed forever, and therefore anything that existed forever needs no cause. And the Christians would say, and therefore, you know, there is no God, and you don't need a cause. The Christians would say, no, no, God created everything, and God existed forever. And since God existed forever, he needs no cause. And then, of course, the scientists say, no, the universe exists forever. Where did your God come from? We say, well, God exists forever. We say, where did your universe come from? They'll say, well, the universe exists forever. And we go back and forth. About 50 years ago, we discovered the Big Bang, and it started with a man named Edwin Hubble, who was looking around at the stars, and he noticed that certain galaxies were redder than other galaxies. And so what he had discovered was the redshift, and what he realized was the galaxies were moving away from us at speeds almost close to the speed of light, and it's the Doppler effect, basically. And so if you take that and you realize all the galaxies are moving, they're all moving away from each other at these fantastic speeds. Now, if you start working backwards, you can realize that if they're all moving away from each other, they used to be all closer together earlier. And if you keep working backwards, you can come to a point when they were all right next to each other. And so when you work that number back, it comes to, and currently the number is 13.7 billion years. 13.7 billion years, everything came to existence with a Big Bang. Now, Christians are like, oh, no, no. And we, other Christians, are saying, this is wonderful because this is what Genesis has been saying for, you know, over 5,000 years, that everything started with a Big Bang when God said, let there be light. In fact, the very first thing after the Big Bang is this gray light that seeps through the entire universe. So there are a couple of things we can find out about this. And I don't go into the argument of whether it's 6 days or six eons or all that, because that's not relevant. Right now, if I'm talking to a non-Christian, he doesn't care about what the Bible says. He cares about the Big Bang. So the Big Bang tells us a number of things. One, by the way, this is all available in my book, Who is Agent X, which you can get online at JesusIsInvolvedInPolitics.com. So that's our website, JesusIsInvolvedInPolitics.
And Who is Agent X?
So Who is Agent X?
Yeah, we'll get that up on our webpage.
And so basically, so if there are a couple of things you can tell about the Big Bang. First of all, that when it happened, it was so fine-tuned. It was so fine-tuned that imagine if you had all the sand, if you had a recipe that asked for 100, and I'll get these numbers, but 100 billion, 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 billion grains of sand, which is equivalent to all the sands on 100 million Earths. And it's that much flour, for instance, or that much sugar. But if you added one more grain of sugar to your recipe, it would explode and blow up. Right? So one grain of sugar in 100 billion, 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 billion grains of sugar. Okay?
Okay.
Difference. That's how fine-tuned the Earth was. If we had changed the number of electrons, the number of neutrons, by one in that number, then the entire universe would have collapsed on itself and we'd have no planets, nothing would have worked. And that's the least of the numbers. There turns out to be 37 numbers like that that are so fine-tuned, like the expansion rate of the universe. If it had been changed by one grain of sand in 10 trillion trillion Earths, right, then the universe would have collapsed on itself and nothing would have happened. So whoever did this knew what he was doing. And then secondly, we talk about in the talk, we'll talk about the dimensions, how that at the point of the Big Bang, there are at least 10 dimensions, if not more. And whoever created the dimensions are outside of the dimensions. So that means whatever created the universe is transcendent. It's outside of the universe. It has nothing to do with the inside of the universe. And why is that important? Because if you understand the dimensions, we can't really comprehend a dimension, but a four-dimensional being, imagine if you're a three-dimensional being, that's you, and there's a two-dimensional being that would be on a piece of paper, right? Now, can a square on a piece of paper hide from you as a three-dimensional being? And the answer is no, because you can see the entire piece of paper, right?
Mm-hmm.
So nothing on the paper can hide from you. So in the same way, if there was a four-dimensional being, we as three-dimensional beings could not hide behind anything. You can't hide from a four-dimensional being. So if there's an extra-dimensional being, that means that being is outside the dimensions, which really means he can see all things all the time. But anyway, so we go through this, and we end up with seven characteristics of the creator, the agent X, or whatever started the Big Bang.
What?
And it turns out to be, it's all-knowing, right, because he's omniscient. He's able to create a fine-tuned universe. He's omnipresent. He's in every dimension all the time. He is he's omnipotent. He's able to create a universe, right? He's also personal. And we go through the other thing is that we prove that he is a non-mechanistic agent. And that's a bit more complicated than we prove, but we go through and we prove that it can't be a machine, it can't be a mindless thing.
What would somebody say to you as a rebuttal to that? Somebody who says, well, you know, I don't really get that argument and I'm not a believer, but what would they say to you to combat that argument?
Well, in the book, as we go through the book step by step, there's no way you can't get the argument. You know, it's very, you know, I'm giving you a quickie here. On when we do the presentation, we have pictures and videos and stuff like that. Can I just walk you through the argument? But what here's what they do. I've literally had atheists come and say, "Well, I don't believe in the Big Bang." I'm like, "Really? Seriously?" And they go, "Well, the Big Bang came from nothing." And the problem with nothing is it doesn't work either because it ends up being a mechanistic agent, and we talk about that. There really is only one thing left for the atheist, and that is that there are infinite universes. So there are two options at the end of this. Either everything happened by accident, in which case there had to be infinite of these things happening, so there are infinite universes. And we talk about that. The problem with infinite universes, it means that there are probably millions and billions of yous and me's out there having this conversation on some other universe somewhere. In fact, and I say to the atheists, you don't believe that. And the reason I know you don't believe that is because let's say we're playing poker and I get 10 royal flushes in a row. And you jump up and you say, "You're cheating. You're cheating. You can't get 10 royal flushes in a row." And I go, "No, no, no. We just happen to be in that one universe where I always get a royal flush." Would you buy it?
No.
And of course you'll say, "No, you're a dirty, rotten cheater." I go, "If you don't buy that, why do you buy the fact that the infinite universes? You don't believe the infinite universes. It's a cop-out to you." And so you end up with that option, and I have an atheist friend who actually helped me edit the book, and he said, you know,
"Oh, that's nice."
The back of the book has about 40 pages of objections that I've gotten from atheists. So yeah, he's a co-worker with me, and he, you know,
he's like the ultimate proofreader.
Yeah, he is. He just, you know, he said, "Oh, well, this kind of area is weak. You need more evidence here." And I kind of worked on it with him. And he was really great about it. But in the end, I said, "So what do you think about this?" He says, "Well, you know what? I hate to admit it, but I'm going to have to go with the infinite universes."
Hmm.
Right?
Interesting.
So the point wasn't, at the end of the day, the point wasn't that he didn't accept the science. The point was he didn't want to humble himself before a creator. But I'd gotten him to the point where he realized that. And I said, "The point is, really, you don't want to humble yourself before God." He said, "Yeah, that's true."
So
and now the conversation takes a completely different tack, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And how do you? And so I'm not really familiar with the religions of the third world countries, but how do you bring that all together?
Well, with the religion, all that did was prove that there was a God, but it proved the Jewish God and the Muslim God. And the Christian God, which is the same as the Jewish God. But it just proves that there is a single God. And there can't be multiple gods because you can't have multiple infinite beings. It's self-contradictory. You know?
So it is possible that my husband could get virgins in the afterlife?
Well, no. With that proof, all I've done is get
you okay
that
with
far.
That? No, I'm not, actually.
Okay.
So good.
We've been married a long time.
And that is not okay.
That is not.
Well, my wife had this comment. She said, "So wait, let me get this straight. What does a good Muslim woman get, right? If she doesn't get, 70 virgins, and my wife said, that would frankly be rather irritating to have 70 virgins."
I agree.
Women are like, "I don't want that." But, by the way, that's not in the Quran. That's in one of the hadiths. It was an added fact later, but it's accepted as, it's actually what has been used for many of the hijackers and the terrorists and stuff to incentivize them. But so all we did with that is we proved that God exists, or it's more reasonable to think God exists. So the next phase is, okay, now let's fine tune it. So that's when we start looking at the Bible and the Quran and things like that. So the next way you start looking at the Bible, is the Bible accurate? And then the Bible is accurate, then we look at the claims of Jesus. Did Jesus really claim to be God? And then if he did claim to be God, then we look at what happened 2,000 years ago. So that's how we leave it. So we fine-tune it. We start big, we fine-tune it, and go down to Christianity.
Okay.
Excellent.
So there it is in a nutshell. It's quite a bit.
That's
but
a nutshell, for sure. Hey, and I just want to say that the chat room is a little saucy this morning. Max says he doesn't want 72 versions. He wants the ones that know what they're doing. And I think that's a good time to take a break, don't you?
I do.
I would expect nothing less from our chat room.
We're going to thank our advertisers because they make it all possible.
That's right.
And we'll.
And we will be back.
With more of We the People on AM 1460, the home of free fire media, KCNR.
Drop kick me, Jesus, through the goalposts of life. End over end, neither left nor to right. Straight through the heart of them arises uprights. Drop kick me, Jesus, through the
goalposts in white.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com. If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built a wall.
We built the pyramids, math, science, history, unraveling the mystery that all started with a big bang.
Oh, Bob, you did it again. You never let me down.
I love that
so
show.
So not disappointed. Okay, who is it?
Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, well, there you go. 72 of them?
No, there's only about a half a dozen, I think.
Okay, we're not going to let this go downhill today. Okay, Neil, carry on.
So that's pretty much what we talk about. We talk about the science, and as you can see, it pulls kids in, it pulls adults in, and you know, usually when I, and by the way, I'm available if you want me to come teach at your church. This is a great topic amongst the adults and the high schoolers. And here's what I tell parents: statistics indicate that anywhere between 75% to 93% of every Christian kid who leaves your church today and goes to college will leave the faith.
I agree with that.
That's a horrible statistic. It's like 7 kids to 25 kids change faith, and the rest leave. And the reason they leave is because they say when they get to college, their emotional faith to Jesus is replaced with new emotions, and their intellectual concepts are challenged by their professors. In fact, there are professors out there who specifically considered their job to separate kids from their faith. And I have quotes from professors that say, you know, my job is to separate you from your parents' frighteningly oppressive religion, you know? And that's what they're running into.
And the studies today show, and you've talked about the fact that the college kids actually want to stay in school, and they don't want to work, and they want to be unemployed.
Yeah,
so they're not going to contribute, and their minds are going to get mushed up with these professors who have no... and where did they come from, by the way?
And honestly, you can stay in school all day long if you want to, but at some point you have to have practical application in the society that you live in.
Absolutely, and I think you have to contribute to society, and I don't see that happening, and it's going to be a huge challenge to get there.
More than that, the Bible tells us that man enjoys work. When God created Adam, he enjoyed working in the garden. We all actually enjoy being productive. There's something in our being that says we want to produce, we want to contribute. And what we're doing is we're taking this away from generations of people on welfare. We're shorting these people who are not given the chance to enjoy that great joy of productivity, of working, of contributing to society, of doing great things. But coming back to the kids, though, so the problem with the kids is that they're going off to college and they're living the faith. And I say the reason is because they need apologetics. But I say, here's the problem. I love speaking at churches, and I love speaking to adults. I love speaking to kids. I started my ministry with junior high. In fact, I still speak. All my talks are geared towards junior high because I figure adults have the same, nowadays with TV, they have the same attention span as junior hires did. And also most of the people I'm speaking to are the junior hires I used to speak to. But when I get there, I say, look, I can speak to junior hires all day. I can speak to high school students all day, every time that they're in church. And I will only have a 17% influence on them. The TV, the media... Mm-hmm. And their peers have something like a 28% influence over them. So the only people that can affect change in your kid's life is mom and dad, because they have 53% influence on your kid. So I said, you have to create a culture of apologetics in your home. That means, mom and dad, you have to become experts in this. You have to understand the arguments. And when your kid comes and says, well, why is there suffering in the world, which, by the way, we teach about, we explain it, if you don't have an answer and you just say, oh, honey, you just have to have faith, that's the wrong answer.
Because yeah, that's what we've grown up on. And the problem is that as a parent, if you say that, if you don't have an answer, you lose all your credibility. And you're right. You're competing with the professors. That's not great.
No, because they have legitimate arguments that are one way.
And so what we tell them is like, honey, the answer should be, honey, I don't know. Let me go find out. And the first place you should go to is our site, noblankness.com, where we have resources. Not only do I point you to information we have, but there are lots of other great sites out there. In fact, we have a mailing list. If you live in the Bay Area, we have a mailing list, a Yahoo Groups list. If you go to noblankness.com, we will mail you whenever there's an apologetic event in the area. So you can bring your kids. You can come yourself. And what I tell parents is, look, it's quite simple, simply this. If your child had a disease, would you trust the doctors to know everything about that disease? Or would you become the expert in the cure yourself? Would you be on the internet? Would you be reading? Will you be calling doctors all over the world, experts all over the world? Would you be looking up things and reading things and understanding things? Or would you just abandon it to some doctor that you didn't know? No, you would become an expert. Well, let me tell you, kids have a disease. It's called sin, and the world's going to continue infecting them. When are you going to become the expert?
Yeah,
and that makes total sense because we were just talking about that before we started the show, and you do. You become the experts, and you start telling the doctors what, you know, just you don't really know what their background is, and you just step in and say, you know, here's what I've been reading, so explain to me why you wouldn't be doing this.
And, you know, and the point is that doctors are not God, and they are human, and to leave everything in their hands is a little bit risky.
Right,
and
so now what we've done is we've left everything in the hands of the professors.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, you take care of my kids. Yeah, you have the best.
Because we think that they're smarter. And I think people are inherently smart if they've worked and they have some practical and experience, and they go with, like most women, go with their gut feelings on a lot of things. But I think we're smart, but we want our kids to be smarter than us. So you trust that the professors are going to do that. We do have a call from Brian on line one. Brian, are you there?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Did you have a question for Neil or a comment?
Well, we're on our way to church, and I was just listening to this, and it reminded me of my daughter, Sarah, and with what we're doing with her right now. And you're absolutely correct. We really have to do research and understand what's going on with our bodies and not just always depend on the doctors, because the doctors don't know everything either. They have to go by your symptoms and kind of figure out what they think it might be. And with our daughter, I mean, we've really gotten to the point where we have to do, because she's got some stomach problems, we really got to get in there and say, look, you know, we've done all these different avenues. We've checked for allergies. We've done this. We've done this. So we're trying to narrow down the possibility by eliminating a lot of the different things that it could be till we get it down. Now we're down to taking her to San Francisco, and they're going to actually have to scope her to get in there to really look and see what's going on.
You know, but the point is that no, the doctors don't live with your child. You do. So who really knows better? As far as what her day-to-day symptoms are than you. I mean, you can describe it all day long to a doctor, but he wasn't there, he or she.
Well, let me turn the question around. And I'm sorry, you call your name was Bob?
Brian.
Brian, sorry. I'm terrible with names. Sorry, Brian. Brian, so let me ask you a question, though. I don't want to move away from the physical concerns of your daughter, but are you paying the same attention to her spiritual concerns when she has questions about the faith and stuff? That's, you know, that would be where I would say that we need to be, as parents, to be focused on. So,
well, we're going to church right now, so we're dealing with that spirituality aspect. And we do talk to her. We're open, very open with her about it. She knows everything that's going on, and we help her be able to describe her symptoms to us and how to deal with it emotionally. We are doing the emotional aspect, the spiritual aspect, and the medical aspect with her. We're taking it all the way around. And she's very open.
The question
she's not afraid
is
to go in and be scoped. She completely understands the circumstances. And she really is helping us because she's giving us information about her, and it's pretty accurate. So
Brian, as far as her spirituality, and I think that was what Neil was getting to, is, you know, the medical issues aside, how do you deal?
How do you measuring her spirit?
She comes home and says, well, you know, isn't it kind of mean-spirited to think everybody else is going to hell except for a Christian? How do we answer that? You know, if he says, how can God exist when there's evil in the world? Or the one, well, I love is, can God create a stone so big that he cannot move it?
God is beside us. He's supporting us and he's loving us. But I think the way we believe in God is God does not cure all these things. God has provided us support. He's given us the knowledge to be able to go forth and have quality and strength and courage. But we know that God does not.
Well, I think we're losing you, Brian, but I think what I'm saying, or what I've heard Neil say, is that the emotional side of it, that we do give that to our kids, but we don't give them the intellectual side of the spirituality and religion,
because
that
someday
answers those questions for why bad things happen.
And I think children automatically need proof. They will always come around at some point and say, well, why? And how do you know that? And that's where a parent has to have the answers available. I think we have to do more than say, just trust me.
And my dad used to say to us, God will give you the boat to cross the river, but you got to row.
So that, and what does that mean exactly?
We knew exactly what that meant. That meant hard work and just... It was, you didn't do it on blind faith. You had to get in there and participate.
Or God helps those who help themselves.
The beauty about this, Bob, if you're still, Brian, if you're still listening. The beauty about this, though, is that all the information is available. It's not that we have to just believe it. That information is available if you just go look for it. And as I said, one of the best sites, there are lots of best sites. One of the sites to start, that would be our website, which is noblindfaith.com. And I actually appoint you to a bunch of other really good sites.
And Neil, we have to take a hard break here, so we'll get back to you. And Brian, I wish you well in the hunt to find out what's going on with your daughter. It is actually, I think, the parents' role to get in there and explore all options and not leave it in other people's hands, because I think that you will find what's going on with her, and I wish you guys well.
Yeah, and we will be praying for your daughter. Right? We don't know her name, but we will be praying.
So you're joining We the People Radio. Grab a cup of coffee. Don't go away.
Another hour.
We'll be back.
Stay tuned for the news here at KCNR at Shasta Redding, followed by the second hour of We the People.
Every time I look at you, I don't understand why you let the things you did get so out of hand.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of We the People Radio. You know, that bumper music, if that doesn't wake you up on a Sunday morning, I don't know what would, other than your great strong coffee, Bob.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you for filling in on the coffee department this morning.
You're welcome. I know you're a little slow on the uptake today because you're not feeling good, so I hope that stuff clears up soon.
We want to encourage people also to call if you have a question for us or for Neil, 530-605-4567, also live streaming at kcnr1460.com.
And the chat room is alive and well as usual.
Right, and you know,
we have a great crew on the chat room.
We do. At this hour, we want to talk about politics.
Yeah, they're alive.
Well,
I think they might still be talking about the virgins, but...
It's hard for them to let go of that.
But this hour, Neil, we want to talk a little bit about the politics. And one of the things that I read was a little quip from your website, and that was, are you better off than you were $4 trillion ago? And I thought that was pretty...
That's beautiful.
I mean, I just thought that was so profound that I said, you know, that's going to win the election for the Republicans.
Amen. Well, we hope so. We pray so. And the question there is that, you know, we spend all this money. In fact, it's not just $4 trillion. I mean, this whole battle against poverty, against, the poor people started way back then with FDR, right, and Johnson, with the Great Society and the New Deal.
So, you know, here we are. It's only $4 trillion. It's probably about $5 or $6 trillion that we've been spending in. Actually, it's a lot more than that, come to think of it. Because if you add up all the money we've spent on welfare and things like that since then, and what has happened to poverty? Has it gone down? No, it's gone up. And it's not gone up. And you say, well, there's been more, there are more people in the U.S. No, no, no. There might be more people in the U.S., but the ratio of people that are on welfare and in poverty and are, you know, are under the what we call the poverty level has increased. So for the last 80 years, we've been fighting the battle on poverty. It hasn't worked. And when I talk to liberals and progressives about that, I go, so you tell me why we should keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. Now, of course, sometimes they'll answer back. We'll say, well, it's because you conservatives keep stopping us. I go, well, here you had last 2 years. You've had, you know, you've had so many years of these programs. And conservatives have not been able to stop them. And yet what happens? More people need it. So something is going wrong. Where are we going to fix the problem?
Well,
and if you think that repeating the same thing over and over again is an insanity.
Well, yeah, that is the definition.
Well, doesn't socialism and welfare sort of enhance the sin nature in all of us?
Exactly. And we talk about that in my book. So the book is Jesus is involved in politics. Why aren't you? Why isn't your church? And I opened the book by talking about some of the things that are happening in the U.S. For instance, in Philadelphia, a 70-year-old African-American great-grandmother and 10 other Christians were thrown into jail for having the audacity to stand on the sidewalk during a gay pride parade. And they were not saying homosexuality is bad or anything. They were just preaching the gospel. And they were fined. Each of them were arrested, and they first faced 47 years in prison and fines of $90,000 each. Now, in Salem, Massachusetts, police officers arrested an evangelism director for preaching the gospel to a bunch of rowdy Halloween partiers. I mean, the Halloween partiers and everybody else were just as loud, and they arrested him for being too loud, and he didn't even have a megaphone. In Phoenix, the pastor was sentenced to jail for 10 years, for 10 days, and 3 years of probation because a judge forbade their church to chime, church bells to chime, except for 2 minutes on Sundays. And it's important to note that their church bells were softer than an ice cream truck.
Okay, so Neil, let me ask you a question. So when you are stating these examples of people, you know, basically being persecuted, does that keep people away? I mean, does it put the fear, I mean, no pun intended, but does it put the fear of God in them to the extent that they stay in the shadows and they don't come forward and step up?
No, I think on the other hand, if Christians understood that this was happening, if the Christians saw this happening, they would rise up. But I think what's happening is the church does not realize this danger. It's like that creeping, you know, it's like the story of the frog in the pot. You know,
if you put him in the water,
he'll jump right out. Now, I don't know if it's true. I think studies have shown that it's not true. He'll jump out anyway. But
yeah, they don't like the water, right?
No, they don't want to hot water. Even if you, but the parable says that if you keep heating the water slowly, the frog will eventually die. He'll boil to death because he just thinks it's okay. It's okay. And I think that's what's happening to the church. We think it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. And we're not getting involved in politics. And yet, the reality is, there's something like 60 million self-proclaimed evangelicals and Catholics who are conservative in the United States today. And yet, of the 60 million in most races, most elections, 40 million of them do not vote. 40
now,
million. Imagine,
that
Obama
just blows
won
me away.
9 million votes. He won with 9 million votes in 2008. In fact, elections are won and lost with thousands of votes. I mean, look at Washington, the state of Washington that just legalized same-sex marriage. She won. She beat the governor. And there was the conservative governor who was running, conservative running against her for governor a few years ago with something like 60 votes or like 100 votes or something. Now imagine if 10,000 or 5,000 Christians had gone and voted. It's hard to cheat against that. You know, I know we're pretty much sure they cheated, but if it's close, they can cheat. If it's not close, they can't cheat. And so yet Christians are sitting there and they're saying that, you know what, they're ignoring the problem. And it really frustrates me because I came from the Middle East. I grew up in the Middle East and Africa. And you know what, you can't preach the gospel there. You can't do anything there. You can't even vote there well enough, you know. And you see what's happening now. And Americans are thinking, oh no, it'll never happen to America. We'll never become oppressed. We'll never become a nation like the Middle East or a third world country. And I say, you know what? Don't be arrogant. Nations die. History is littered with the bones of nations. Don't think America will not die if we don't take action now.
Well, how do you
how do you combat the Republicans, the moderate Republicans, that really fear the religious right just coming up and taking over, which is basically what you're asking them to do? And Obama created the Tea Party, like you stated, and
he's
so what we have it. Should we expect another party to spring up?
Well, here's the thing. I think starting a new party is actually going to be very hard and very dangerous, and we'd probably lose for many years, and by that time the nation will be something we don't recognize. Right? So we can't do that. We've got to work with it. And I think the Tea Party idea is wonderful. We focus on local races. We get people into the party at the local level. We get people into at the representative level, and then we change the top, right? So I think that's very key, and I think that the Tea Party strategy is wonderful. I'm actually speaking at a Tea Party rally on April 14th in Pleasanton and the April 15th Tea Party rally in San Jose. So we'll have
that
up on the website. So I get to go on right after Armstrong and Getty and Brian Sussman. So,
oh, fun.
I wanted to share the stage with them.
We need you to come up here and speak to the Tea Party up here.
You know, I'd love to. Just give me an invitation. All I need is 10 minutes to get some really key ideas over. When we're outdoors, I don't like talking for too long. I think it's key to get the points in there and get off the stage.
You got it.
We'll get back
to you on that. Hey, so before we take our break, very quickly, how are the pastors responding to your message?
Well, they are very tentative. A lot of them are afraid. They're afraid of their audience, their congregation. They're afraid of their deacons. They're afraid of their elder board. So I say you got to do this under the radar. And so what we're recommending is everybody get a copy of the book and start a book club. We give you a free download to the study guide. Start a book club. Start the movement in your church and move upwards towards the leadership.
Oh, that's nice.
You'll find a lot of pastors agree with us, but they're afraid to do anything about it.
Yet another grassroots movement.
Exactly.
There you go. I love those. I love those grassroots movements.
I do too. They're really the most effective.
We're ready to take a break. Bob?
Thanking our advertisers yet again. Couldn't do this without them. We the People Radio on KCNR 1460, Shasta Redding.
The home of Free Fire Media.
I can only imagine what it will be like when I walk by your side. I can only imagine what my eyes will see when your face is before me. I can only imagine.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Now God seen some sinning, and it gave him pain. And he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, Brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo, and take some of them
green alligators and long-necked geese. Some Humpty back camels and some chimpanzees. Some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn.
That's our St. Patrick's Day special.
I know. Today's my brother's birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Jimmy.
Happy birthday to my mother and my daughter-in-law.
Nice.
Yeah, busy.
Great day.
Well, yesterday and the day before. Busy, busy birthday times. So, Bob, that was?
The Irish Rovers with the unicorn song.
Nice.
Getting a reference to the story of Noah's Ark in there.
Nice. You did it again. You hit it out of the ballpark.
Neil, I have a question for you that this has been sitting and looming at me the whole time. So I wanted to ask you, you called Romney a convenient opportunist. So I want to know, get an explanation on that, and who are you going to vote for?
Well, my candidate was Michelle Bachmann. I wasn't sure if she could win, but I was going to commit because I believed everything she voted for. My next candidate, closest candidate, is Santorum. I have some misgivings on him. He does tend to be at odds with some of my Tea Party concepts. You know, he is sort of big government, but he's not. But he does have moral values and conservative moral values. And I think, as I write in my book, I said, the reality is I got to vote morals over money. I got to vote morality over money. And I talk about, there's a whole section in the book that says why I can't vote for a fiscal conservative only. And here's the problem with Mitt Romney. Is even though he comes from a Mormon background, and many Mormons are very conservative, I believe he comes to his conservatism as a matter of convenience, not as a matter necessary of principle or a matter of understanding the ideas behind it. And the reality is that, as we talk about in the book of Jesus is involved in politics, why aren't you, why isn't your church? As I go through, I say most of our problems in this country are not caused by fiscal issues. They're all caused by moral issues. And I'll point to one of them that we spend an inordinate time on the book because it's very important. Back in 1969, a man I respect very greatly did a very bad thing. His name is Ronald Reagan, and he signed into law the law called no-fault divorce. Now, this is not a condemnation of anyone who has had a divorce. We're all sinful people, me involved too.
I picked my poison, by the way.
Pardon?
I picked my poison.
Yeah, okay. So we all are sinful, but I'm just talking about the consequence of this one law. So the consequence of the no-fault divorce law is now you could get the divorce for any reason. You know, you just didn't like them, you didn't get it wrong. So as a result of that no-fault divorce law, today 29 to 30% of all kids come from broken families or single parent families or families that are where there's no father in the house. But if you look at the statistics, you'll see that 75% of all our criminals, all our prisoners, come from broken homes. 60% of all rapists come from broken homes. 65% of all suicide come from broken homes. If you come from a broken home, you're 4 times more likely to fail in school or need special education. If you come from a broken home, you're 90% more likely to do. You're 90% of all our welfare people come from broken homes. Obviously, 90% of all gang members come from broken homes. If you go to any society or any community in America, and you measure, it doesn't matter if they're rich or poor, it doesn't matter whether economic scale is, if you measure the number of broken homes in that family and you compare it to the crime rate, it will correlate one-to-one. So you could have a very poor, depressed neighborhood, but if they're full of intact families, the crime rate will be almost zero. And then you compare that to a very rich neighborhood like a Hollywood neighborhood or something with lots of broken homes, the crime rate will be higher. And this happens in England, and they've done these studies all over the world, and the book goes through all the different studies. In other words, what we're saying is that the reason that we have problems today is because of the breakdown of the family. This was a moral issue. Go back to 1969. You stop that law. You keep making it. I'm not saying divorce is bad. There are times when there's physical abuse and infidelity. There's all good reasons for divorce. But any reason for divorce is not a good reason. And what has happened is we've treated divorce like it's
commonplace.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, the plan all along was, if you look at the Communist Manifesto, one of the things that you do is a country from within is to take down the morality first.
Right. Well, in fact, one of the Communist Manifesto things say that the first step is to bring in no-fault divorce.
Well, it makes sense because I'll tell you what, growing up with my parents who are still married after 50-some-odd years, the bottom line with them is that they're bickering and they're fighting and things out of love always, but they teach that it taught us how to really interact socially, how to stand
and having a fight didn't mean that it was the end.
Exactly right.
It was
the values
normal.
They taught us were to be self independent, and they gave us the skills to actually make it in life through those, you know, but my mom's Italian and my dad's German, and, mm-hmm. you know, that really just...
Well, that must have been fun.
Yeah, it was.
Neil, real quick, there was a question on the chat room a little while ago that asked whether or not you thought that this recent HHS mandate on contraception has awoken the Catholics and other evangelicals.
Yes, and I'm hoping it continues to do so, and I'm hoping there's some good ads in the 2012 election. Here's what happened. The Catholic Church over the years, now, let's go back to welfare. You asked a question about welfare earlier.
You said welfare is against the sin nature of man. Exactly. Now, the whole welfare is against the Constitution of the United States for many reasons, but one of the simplest reasons is, why did we put a separation of powers in the Constitution? We should have put a separation of power in the Constitution because we believe that every man has a sin nature, and if you give somebody too much power, it will corrupt him and he will use it for bad reasons. Therefore, we wanted the powers to be separated. Well, that same concept, that man has a sin nature, also extends the fact that man is full of gluttony, sloth, avarice, you know, the seven deadly sins. Well, we are lazy and we don't want to work and we want to take as much as we can. We're greedy. So let's look at socialism. Socialism says that you don't need to work hard, and other people, you will come from other people. So what socialism actually, the premises of socialism is that every person will work as hard as he can and will only take as little as he needs. That's the premise of socialism, right? Everybody works together, and we just take what we need. But the reality is that sin nature man says that everybody will work as little as he can and take as much as he needs.
Which is exactly what we're seeing.
It's exactly what we're seeing. So socialism every time is doomed to what? Huge costs and people and inefficiency. And it'll never work because the sin nature man is such that it'll never work. And so therefore, when you come to somebody who just wants to be a fiscal conservative, I say it's like managing your money when you're fighting malaria. You're just saying, hey, we got to get cheaper drugs for malaria. No, the problem with malaria is you got to stop the mosquitoes from biting and the mosquitoes, the larvae from growing, and you got to buy mosquito nets, not just give people drugs. You can give people drugs all day long, but if you don't stop the mosquitoes, you are going to have more malaria, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're trying to give people more drugs instead of stopping the mosquitoes, which is destroying our society, and it all tends to come to moral issues.
Exactly.
So you can't be just a fiscal conservative. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a hardcore Tea Party supporter, and I don't believe the Tea Party should bring moral issues into it.
What if Romney's the nominee, though? Or Romney is the nominee? What if Romney is the nominee?
If Romney's nominee, I will be 100% behind him. There's nothing I can do about it. I will support him, and I will pay for his campaign.
Well, it's like somebody on the chat room said, if Mickey Mouse runs, they'll vote for Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, as long as it's not Obama, right?
There you go.
I don't think Romney is the best one, because look, we had a moderator before. His name was John McCain.
Exactly.
The person who brings the fight to the forefront is not going to be a moderator. It's going to be someone with passionate convictions, and Rick Santorum has it. Rick Santorum will come up there, the media will attack him, and every time they attack the media, the Catholic will say, hey, they're attacking us. Every time they say Rick Santorum has these bad values, the Christians will say, hey, those are my values. So, yes, attack Rick Santorum, call him closed-minded, call him taking us back into the ice ages, but many Christians are going to say, no, that's my values, and you may not like it, but I'm going to vote for him, and they'll get madder and madder and madder. So bring it on, attack Rick Santorum all you want, but Christians be ready to pour money into that campaign so you can fight back against Obama. Now, again, as I said, this is my personal endorsements for Santorum. I have lots of friends who are all over the place. I think many of my friends are Ron Paul friends, and you know, so they're all over the place. So.
And how do you feel about Ron Paul?
I like Ron Paul. In fact, there are a lot of things about Ron Paul that I really like. I haven't grown up in the Middle East. I just cannot. I cannot accept his foreign policy. And
so,
let me explain quite simply.
And that tends to be a roadblock for a lot of people.
Yeah, and let me explain it quite simply. In fact, I said this to Rick Santorum. It was about 2 or 3 years ago. Rick Santorum came here on campus and was talking at Stanford. And a kid stood up there. And Rick Santorum, as you know, is an expert on foreign policy. And he was talking about Sharia law. He was talking about all this. This was like 2-3 years ago. And he was ahead of the curve way back then. And he was just talking about all these issues. Some kid stands up and he says, why don't you understand that we just need to understand them? Meaning the terrorists.
Yeah, exactly.
And he called Rick Santorum a bigot, right? And I just couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, usually when you go to these things, you're supposed to ask the speaker questions, but I broke from norm, and I did what most are afraid of, is I decided to talk to the last person who spoke. So I went up there, and I said, look, let me explain something. One, I was born in Ghana. I grew up in Yemen, Sudan, and I lived most of my life there before I came to the United States. I have friends who love the United States. I said half my friends love the United States, the other half hated it. And of the half that hated it, half of them wanted to move to the United States because it was so wonderful.
Even though they hated it?
Yeah. I said, but let me be very clear.
the reason why the people who hate us, now it's only about 16% of the Middle East who hate us. There are some very good Muslims out there who don't want to kill us. Okay, let's get that straight. But they're afraid to speak out because the 16% that do want to kill us is also willing to kill them. Okay? But if you were to sit down with those 16% and just say, hey, I just want to understand you, they will say, no, I just want you to die. It's not that they want to understand us. They want us to die. Why? Because they think we are infidels, we are godless, and guess what, young man? You represent the godless heathens that they hate more than I do.
There you go.
Because at least I have some moral values in common with them. But you have none. You think that homosexuality is okay. They think it's anathema. You think that, you know, there's so many things. I think, but the point is that it's not because they don't, it's not because of an understanding issue. It's that they want to conquer and remove all non-Muslims. Now, admittedly, it's only 16%, but it's a very influential 16%. So it's very naive to say, you know what, all we have to do is sit down and talk to them.
Well, it's interesting because the millennial generation is actually the generation that is described as being more tolerant of these issues,
yeah.
Social issues.
And they're a generation that will be attacked more. In fact, I said, I as a Christian had no problems living in a Muslim country as long as I didn't speak about my faith. Right? As long as I wasn't preaching, because it was illegal for me to preach, as long as I wasn't preaching my faith, and I was a foreigner, I was okay in the Christian country. But if you went there and tried to promote any some type of your social issues, they would come down on you so fast, it would not be funny.
Well, you know, that's the irony of what I see with some liberals, and I don't like to broad brush anything, but with some liberals, is they promote tolerance and acceptance and a complete lack of judgment on anyone, and the things that they support the most, including the Muslim faith, are exactly the same things that the Muslim faith can't tolerate. So that I don't know why they're not seeing that.
Yeah, well, that's because they don't understand, you know. And if they've lived there for any length of time and actually tried to speak out on these issues, they would learn about it.
And you, usually
when liberals go out there, they don't even speak about it.
You left Yemen because under the threat of death, if I read that correctly, as well.
Yes. Well, we were lucky that it wasn't under the threat of death because my father knew some politicians. But it was, but it could have been that. Because what basically happened is my father was a professor in physics. And a fellow professor had migraine headaches and stuff like that, and one day overdosed or committed suicide, we're not sure. And when the police went into his house, he was a Muslim, they found a Bible with my father's name on it.
Wow.
And so so immediately my dad's contract, he was a visiting professor, was terminated with the university. And when he tried to find out about it, his politician friend said, look, I can save your life, but I can't save your job, so you guys need to leave.
That's awesome.
So that's why we left. And we actually went to South Sudan. My dad went to South Sudan and started a Bible college there in South Sudan. Then had to leave when the war started. Now things are getting better there. Hopefully we'll actually be able to visit one of these days. It's like wherever we go, we have trouble. I was evacuated out of Ethiopia when they had a war, too.
Wow. Well, we need to take a break, Neil, again, and we'll get back to you here in just a few minutes.
More of We the People straight ahead on AM 1460, KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Yeah. A boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at millerautotransport.com.
Jones's Fort, Redding's full-line gun shop, offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's full-line gun shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find the gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have four full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
Come into Bibles, Books, and More, the Good Book Store at 2025 Hilltop Drive near the corner of Mistletoe and Hilltop. Locally owned and operated since 2007, personalized customer service is our specialty. Here at Bibles, Books, and More, we offer on-site Bible imprinting and mail-to-jail services. Special orders are no problem at Bibles, Books, and More, the Good Book Store at 2025 Hilltop Drive.
The hotline is open on KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567.
Jumping in, if you're new to this show, in the last half hour of We the People, you're with Ruth Angel, Elizabeth Woodward, and Bob Martin. We're talking to Neil Manum of Jesus Is Involved in Politics. And Neil, before we continue on with our discussion, real quickly, why don't you kind of shout out the book titles, the websites, and everywhere people can find you?
So basically, the title of the book is Jesus Is Involved in Politics. Why aren't you? Why isn't your church? And you can find it at JesusIsInvolvedInPolitics.com and or on Amazon, but we recommend you go to the book site and the website and download a study guide for it. What we're asking is people download the study guide, look at it, and consider starting a small group study that will allow you to permeate these ideas into the church amongst people of faith and people who believe, so that we can get at least from the 40 million Christians that don't vote today, if we can get another 20 million out to the polls, or even 10 million out to the polls in November, we will win this election handily, and I think it's very important. The other thing that we're asking people to do is educate themselves. In the book, we talk about how laws do change hearts, how you only legislate morality. People say you can't legislate morality. We blow that away in the book. People say laws don't change hearts. We show that that's not true at all. In fact, laws change hearts all the time. In fact, the liberals believe that. You can get a PhD from Harvard or Yale in topics like cultural change through legislation.
That just blows me away.
Well, and I don't know whether it's I don't know whether it's naive or arrogant to think that you can legislate human behavior.
Well, the problem, though, is that we legislate laws all the time. So what they do is they try to legislate these things. You know, the whole thing with same-sex marriage and all that, what they're trying to do, they're trying to bring these laws, not so much to influence us, but to influence our kids. So kids grow up under a new law, and they learn to love it. And we see that all the time in our homes. For instance, you know, why do we teach our kids to say thank you and sorry? Only so that as long as they're within our earshot, they will say thank you and sorry? No. The law is to say thank you and sorry if you're mean, or thank you when somebody does something nice, so that when they grow up, they will still keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that law has changed their hearts and it affected them. So whatever law they grow up under will affect them in the future. And what will happen is if we have bad laws in our country, it will change people's belief systems. It will change their convictions. And it does change behavior, actually. You know, and it turns out that a lot of people doubt this, but even though as much as prohibition was a horrible thing, it turns out that the level of alcohol consumption after prohibition did not reach the level before prohibition for 40 years. If you just look at the sales of liquor, all types of liquor, beer, wine, and hard liquor, the sales did not equate the old number for 40. In fact, it wasn't until the 1970s that sales of liquor actually reached the pre-prohibition level. In other words, there had been a behavior change, and I'm not saying that was a good law at all. In fact, I think it was a bad law because it was trying to legislate something that was not morally wrong. You know, and that's what happens.
Well,
the book goes into all that, all those details, and it gives you tools to argue with people and discuss with people and explain to people, especially with the, you know, people say Jesus was a socialist. No, he wasn't. But socialism is forcing somebody else to pay for charity. Jesus said, you pay for charity. You take care of the poor. Let me take, you sacrifice.
Now, he's the one that taught people to fish.
Right. Yeah. Well, you talk about $360 billion was sent to charitable organizations in spite of the recession that we're in.
Yeah.
And
so here's what's happening. A lot of people say, you know, if let me explain this. And this is something. This is what I'm going to talk actually at one of the Tea Party in April. The difference between goods and rights. You know, most people think that we understand the Declaration of Independence says that we get our rights not from government but from God. And government's job is to protect the rights that we already have. It's not to give us rights. Because if government gave us rights, they could take them away, right? So God gives us the rights and government protects the ones we already do. But if you look back in history and if we look at what the Occupy Wall Street wants and look at Obama, they, you know, FDR tried to come up with a new Bill of Rights. It was a right to a home, a right to a good job, a right to health care. You know, and Obama wants, he says health care should be a right. You know, Occupy Wall Street, I have the right to this, this, and this. And all of these are things like health care and a home and a job. But what is a right? Is that a right? Is healthcare a right? Is a home a right? Is that equal to the right of freedom of speech or life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Well, it isn't. Here's why. If something comes from God, it's a right. If something comes as a result of man's labor or woman's labor, it is a good. So understand the difference between rights and goods. So a right is something that comes from God. A good is a product of someone's labor. For instance, a house is a good. You don't have a right to a house. Why? Because that means somebody has to build a house for you. And if he builds a house, it's his labor, and you're stealing from him. So you don't have the right to health care because you've got to get that health care from someone, like a doctor. So the doctor has to provide you health care. And if you start assigning goods as though they're rights, soon you will have to enslave a sizable population to provide those goods that you promised as rights. And that's what socialism is. Socialism says that we're going to enslave you and force you to provide goods for other people. And socialism is not Christian. It's against Christianity in so many ways.
Isn't that what they're doing in China?
Yeah, exactly. It's a different fact. If you look at all the constitutions which assign goods as rights, the communist constitutions, and they don't last. They die. It's only the United States Constitution that has lived 200 years. It lives for 200 years because it's based on another document that's 2,000 years old, and that's the New Testament. And we see that the minute you confuse rights with goods, you are going to enslave a population because the only way, as I said, you can assign goods as rights is if you're willing to fiscally or physically enslave a portion of the population to force them to provide those goods for others.
You know, I have a book that I read probably 3 or 4 years ago, and I'll try to make this quick, and it was about a child who is half American and half... not Vietnam, but... Korean, half Korean,
sure.
Half American, and he grew up in South Korea, and he lived during the time when North Korea was taking over, and they broke it down into small bite-sized pieces because it's easier to take over a country if you start in local neighborhoods and communities, but they gave an example of local farmers who were forced to grow food for their whole community. But what they showed was that these farmers would grow just enough for their own family, and they just simply told the powers that be the crops were bad that year and there just wasn't enough for anybody else. They tried to grow it, but it just didn't work, and they couldn't help weather conditions, but they grew enough just for their own families. They find a way around it.
Yeah, and as I there's a phrase I teach my daughter, which is social, and she's only 5, and it goes like this: socialism is the opiate of the ignorant masses, conceived by the elite to control those masses.
That's
happening. Is that they want to control you? They want to make you dependent on them, and the idea that some some entity up there has a better idea of what is good for you than you'd have. You know, Obama knows better for me what I need for my health care. He knows better what I need for my roads, for my gas and all that stuff. Who made him? You know, who died and made him king kind of thing? And why are we abdicating this responsibility to the elites? And what's happening with, you know, what was happening in Korea is people go, wait a minute, I'm not playing with this game. I'm not playing this game. I'm going to be greedy and I'm going to just do what I need to do mm-hmm. for myself. Right?
And that's a matter of survival too.
Exactly. Now, what's very interesting is that, and I'm trying to get more information on this, but there are many studies that show that as capitalism or free markets come back into societies like in Vietnam and stuff like that, the birth rate, the number of deaths at birth go down. So in other words, the infant mortality goes down, and the elders get to grow older, so the adult mortality goes down too. Here's why. If the state gives me money to provide a good, like food or something, they give it to me anyway. It doesn't matter if my food is good or safe or healthy, they're going to give it to me anyway.
Right.
So I get my money. But if my business, my success depends on my clientele living or surviving, I'm going to try and give them better and better food because that's what I want them to live longer. So what happens is farmers now start doing producing healthier meats, healthier produce, better things. Why? Because their customers now need to live longer. So it turns out that mortality goes down as free markets come in because now I care about my customer because he's not a forced customer. He can go anywhere.
And then the government introduces pink goo to our food supply. Our meat supply.
I have to know, does Michelle know about this? Because somebody needs to tell her.
Exactly.
Because, you know, she's all about healthy school lunches.
There you go.
So she must not know about the pink goo.
But I know.
But you must remember what a healthy school lunch is the chicken McNuggets, right?
Oh, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Forget the turkey sandwich on whole wheat.
And the apple. We need to take another break, and we'll get back to the politics.
We're thanking our advertisers. You're listening to We the People Radio, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Folks, last chance to weigh in. We the People Radio, we're with Neil Mannon. Hey, Neil, we've got about 10 minutes. How do you want to wrap this up? And actually, before you jump in, I do want to tell you that we'd love to get you up here to Northern California. I guarantee you that we can pull in 300-400 people if that crowd suits your lecture, but we'd love to get you up here.
This is God's country.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
I would love to come up there.
Okay.
And in fact, if there are any local churches, I'd love to speak there too.
Great.
The apologetic.
We will work on that. We've got several weeks of election debates, kind of tying up our Monday evenings, which is when we meet. But we will definitely be in contact and set up a time to get you up here. We'll make it worth your while.
Great. And if you have any pastors or youth leaders listening on, please contact us at noblindfaith.com or
Great.
Jesus is involved in politics.com.
Excellent.
And we will love to work
and
with
you're also on Facebook, which
I am also on Facebook.
Where the kids go today.
I am very vocal on Facebook. A lot of people.
Hi, Neil. My name's Don. I just jumped in, and I wanted to ask you a question.
Sure.
When did these leaders think they had the divine right of kings and all that to tell us what to do, how to think, how to do anything, and how do we allow that kind of stuff?
Well, I think what happened is we abdicated our responsibility. You know, we slowly, like that frog story we were talking about earlier, we slowly said, oh, yeah, well, let them make the decision. They know better than us. And we just kind of abdicated it. And as I say, laws change hearts. And over the years, we've been brainwashed into believing this more and more and more. Oh, yeah, well, the officials know better. They know better than we do. And believe me, there are many officials who believe they know better than we do, and they're quite happy to take it. And I think what we need to do is we need to go back, to move back to our own personal responsibility, and we need to start letting the judges, and we need to start telling the judges to interpret our laws, not to make our laws. We need to start legislators to understand that we're going to hold them accountable, hold their feet to the fire, and that's another thing that a lot of legislators get elected and then they go off and they forget who they are, and we need to just bring them back to earth and just constantly be in communication with them.
And Neil,
all of these things can be done.
Do you think do you believe that prosperity and comfort leads to complacency?
It does. It certainly does. But the point is now I think most of us are seeing our prosperity and comfort being jeopardized, and I'm hoping that will lead to the opposite of complacency.
And how can we be so apathetic? It's just incredible. And it seems like we're so helpless in doing anything.
But remember, the battle is ours to lose. And I say this in the book. I say, you know, this is ours to lose because, you know what? 80% of the American audience, even though they may not be identified as Christians, agree with many of the principles that Christians believe in. And we have this 40 million army out there that's not voting. And, you know, I'm a hardcore pro-lifer, and I can explain why pro-life is true and important without using the Bible. That's another thing I teach, is how to argue against abortion without using the Bible. It's on our website, noblindfaith.com. If you ever are arguing with someone, use that, because that's all the tactics in there on how to argue against it. But what's important for us to understand is that the only reason abortion is still legal here in America is because Christians have not voted. That's
absolutely
the only reason. The blood of those, you know, the 50 million kids that have been aborted since Roe v. Wade, you know whose blood? It's not on the hands of the abortionists. That's what they believe. That's fine.
And that's genocide, folks. That's genocide.
Yeah, it is genocide. It's on, and worse, it's happening mainly to African-Americans.
How long
friend Walter Hoy, who's an African-American, says that, you know, the most dangerous place in the womb for an African-American, the dangerous place in the world for an African-American is the womb, because something like 30% of all African-American babies are killed in the womb. And if you go to our website, we'll link you over to his website, too.
How often can you turn the other cheek?
Well, see, again, I think the turning the other cheek is a, and I talk, in fact, funny you mentioned that, I talk about it in the book, what about the Sermon on the Mount? I talk about how all the commandments in the Bible are given to certain people. You know, for instance, turning the other cheek is given to you as an individual, is not given to your government, is not given to the head of a family. You know, if a thief comes in the house and tries to kill your daughter, you don't say, oh, here's my other daughter, kill her too. You know, obviously, Christ's commands are articulated towards certain people, and you've got to understand the context. And we go through that, we explain the context. But I think what's important here is that we have the power to do this. It's not hopeless. The only reason it's hopeless is because we haven't gone out there in the churches and raised a ruckus. We haven't gone out there and changed things. So we have, it's ours to lose, folks. We have the power to change this, and we can change it by the next election.
Neil.
In fact, one of the things we're starting, but we hope to have it by June, is we're starting a 40-day series, and it's called 40 Days Towards a More Godly Nation.
You know what? 40 days. You know what, I think they did a thing, and it's kind of just hit me, they did a Twitter thing about the Titanic, and every day, and hours of conversation, and so to start a conversation on Twitter would be, I think, it would build and grow to quite a few and millions if we can get enough people to participate. But one of the things I really like is your broadcast blog at j3ip.wordpress.com. And the reason I like that is because you have a one-minute message that is very simple. I mean, I went in there to listen to a couple of those before the show, and I had to rewind those because they were so profound. And you know, a couple of things that we talked about here, but
One of the blogs that you have on there is about Christian values in America being assailed by courts. And you can go ahead and talk about how your response to that, but it dismissed morality in favor of perceived cultural changes. And I thought that is so true. And if people get that little message, it can change the way they think forever.
Thank you. That's very kind of you to say that. And what we're hoping is people will tweet those broadcasts. You know, you can send the link over to people. You can share it on Facebook. In fact, if you join on the webpage, we will every time we update it. And we do like 3 a week. It's being done, and we're actually broadcast about 170 radio stations in the Midwest and Southern United States through American Family Radio. So,
but I think people need to get on board on your Facebook page because that is the avenue in this day and age to get to people, to reach people's hearts, reach people's minds.
And again, talking about cultural change, social media is where it's at, whether you like it, whether you're comfortable with it, it is what it is. And if you want to reach the right people, you got to do it.
You got to do it.
And I want to take, if we have, I don't know how many minutes, we have like 2 minutes left?
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. So I want to close with this thought. A lot of people say Jesus was not involved in politics because he said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and render unto God what is God. And I want to put this in context. Jesus was involved in politics. Let me explain. Jesus was not a Roman citizen, so he would not have been involved in Roman politics, but he was a citizen of Judea. The state of Judea had a king, which was their president. They had a legislative body that was people like our senators and representatives. In fact, a lot of our information comes from their senators and representatives, and their senators and representatives could make laws. Now, they could not make a law that violated their Torah, which was their constitution, but they could make lesser laws. And so they would make laws all the time. In fact, Jesus would talk to these people who made the laws. Jesus' senators and representatives were people in the Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin consisted of who? The Pharisees and the Sadducees. Jesus was talking to his politicians on a daily basis, and he was telling them, you have violated the Torah, you have violated the constitution of Israel, of Judea, and you're making new laws, you're reinterpreting the laws the wrong way rather than interpreting them the correct way, you're going away from the original intent, and you're forgetting about matters of faith, justice, and faithfulness to the law. And Jesus was involved in politicians on a daily basis.
And I think part of what the elite is trying to do is the separation of church and state. That's another cultural change. Get us away from what we know to be true.
And if you take God out of the Constitution, guess what? We lose all our rights.
Mm-hmm.
And let me leave you with a little Jewish saying, Zygazunt, go with God.
Thank you. And he goes into the next hour with his own show.
Which is not as profound as what you've been talking about.
Thanks, Don.
Neil, thank you so much for being a part of our radio broadcast this morning. It's very important that your message, I think you're a change agent, I think that message needs to get out, and the more people that listen to you, it has to change their hearts and their minds. I just believe that that's true, and I think that we need to infuse maybe some of this into the millennia generation, because I think out of the 40 million Christians that vote, we need to get these kids on board as well.
Well, thank you.
Agreed.
It's an honor to be on the show.
And we do agree that you're a change agent, Neil. And we really thank you again for joining us. We will be in touch to get you up to Northern California. Thank you. It's been an awesome 2 hours. We're all in the same battle together, so we will be spreading your word.
Went by very quick.
Thank you.
We tried to cover all the bases.
And Ruth Angel, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Look forward to seeing you, hearing you next week. And, of course, our show is on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock, Everything Real Estate. And all of this does affect our real estate.
Sure, it does. Everything does. Politics are in everything, whether you like it or not. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, in our remaining time, could we touch on the Tea Party meeting tomorrow night?
Well, we're just doing a lot of elections. So, you know, look at any Tea Party anywhere you live. This is election season. There are debates going on everywhere. I encourage you to jump in. It's your opportunity to become aware of who's going to be stepping into those seats that profoundly impact your life. So
I understand that
the
supervisors are going to be at your Tea Party to debate.
Tomorrow night will be the assembly.
There you go.
So join us.
Rick Bassetti among those scheduled to be there tomorrow night. And Brian Daly, is that correct?
That's right.
All right, good deal.
Should be good.
All right, Aaron, we're thinking of you. Thank you so much, Ruth. Thank you, Elizabeth. Happy Sunday, everybody.
Let's roll, America. There's a job to be done. Let's roll, America. There's a battle to be won. Wake up, America. You're too young to die. Let's roll, America. The good Lord's on our side.